Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
On Monday, the European Council of the European Union, or EU, approved new copyright rules. They aim to give more protection to artists and news organizations. Critics say the new rules will limit freedom of speech and online creativity and punish smaller web companies. Famous artists, performers, and tech experts have spoken out both against and in support of the EU directive. The 28 EU members are required to establish the law in their countries. The law will have an influence on everyone, however, as the internet crosses many international borders. There has been much debate on one part of the directive that affects internet platforms, such as Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. The directive asks online platforms to require their users to get permission to upload any material from the creator of such materials. It says the platforms will be responsible for making sure that their users obey the law. Some think that meeting these rules will reduce freedom of expression on the internet and could result in censorship. Another part of the law requires search engines like Yahoo or Google News and social media sites to pay for linking to or showing a few sentences from news articles. Paying for each of those links will increase costs for the companies. Some sites would be forced to get a written agreement to use music or videos. If not, sites would have to make sure they do not include unlawful copyrighted material. Computers will have to look for such material and remove it, since it would be impossible for humans to check the large number of uploads to the internet. That could give large tech companies a major advantage over smaller companies. Google said last year it spent more than $100 million on a system for approving material on YouTube. More than 400 hours of content is uploaded every minute. Critics say the EU directive could act as censorship and change internet culture. That is because the automatic filters may delete some material that should be permitted online. YouTube said that to avoid trouble in some cases, it would have to block videos if they are unsure about the copyright. Some users worry that the new rules would stop creation of parodies and viral internet memes, so popular in online culture. Such content is often based on or connected to existing songs or movies or other content. The EU directive permits this kind of use as an exception to its rules. Julia Reda is a lawmaker with the Pirate Party, which campaigns for freedom of information online. The new law makes everyone a loser. Artistic diversity has made the internet colorful, but unfortunately, The copyright directive will make the internet duller, she says. Some artists think the directive will help them. The music industry and other groups that collect fees say the change will help. It will require big tech companies such as Apple, Facebook, and Google to pay artists, writers, and creators more for their work. Google estimates it has paid out more than $3 billion to rights holders through its Content ID system, which was created in 2007. Some high-profile artists have supported the change. Former Beatles member Paul McCartney wrote an open letter to EU lawmakers asking them to approve the new rules. Others are afraid they will not earn much more money and that their creativity will be silenced. But many worry it will change the internet as we know it. More than 5.2 million people signed an online appeal to stop the new rules. Internet stars such as Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, and Wikipedia co-founder Jimmy Wales are against it. So is Wyclef Jean, the former leader of the music group The Fugees. He has said he is better off financially because fans can freely share his music on internet platforms. German government spokesman Stefan Siebert says Germany wants to avoid upload filters and hopes that user rights, freedom of opinion, about which there has been a lot of discussion here, be preserved. Last month, tens of thousands of people marched in cities across Germany to protest the directive. Poland's leader has said his country will not enforce it, arguing it threatens freedom of speech. The EU's member countries have 2 years to follow the directive by changing their own national laws. Six countries, Italy, Sweden, Poland, Finland, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg, voted against it, so enforcement is likely to be uneven. There will probably be many arguments in court before the laws have all been changed. I'm Jill Robbins.
In the American television show Saturday Night Live, actors make jokes of realistic situations and people like politicians and sports personalities. In one program, for example, sports reporters Pete and Greg discuss a women's curling game between Finland and Paraguay. But it soon becomes clear that they do not understand the game. A player from Paraguay scores, and the men say this.
What an amazing curl, knocking Team Finland right out of the house. Look at that, she is fired up. Bingo.
Whoa, I have no idea what's happening.
Well, neither do I, buddy. The rules of this game are baffling to me.
You just heard Pete say, neither do I, to show agreement with Greg's statement. Pete is saying that he also has no idea what is happening. Very short responses like this are extremely common for English speakers around the world. We use them in speech and informal writing every day. In English, we can use the words so, neither, to, and either to say that what is true for some person is also true for us. In today's program, I will talk about so and neither. The word so shows agreement with positive statements, and the word neither shows agreement with negative statements. You will hear and see examples of both today. But first, we will talk about how to form these statements. In a usual English statement, the subject comes first and is followed by the verb. The structure is subject plus verb plus rest of sentence. For example, if I say, "We visited a beautiful beach," the subject is we, followed by the verb visit. But when we use so and neither to show agreement, the structure changes. The subject comes at the end, and we mainly use an auxiliary verb. The structure is so or neither plus auxiliary or be plus subject. Auxiliary verbs are helping verbs that do things like form verb tenses. They can include do, be, have, and others. In Pete's statement, "Neither do I," for example, the word neither is followed by the auxiliary verb do and the subject I. To show agreement using so and neither, the choice of verb and tense in the response depends on the original statement. Let's start with the simple present verb tense, and I will show you what I mean. We can say, "So do I," and "Neither do I," to agree with statements in the simple present tense. Listen to an exchange between speakers.
Manny loves seafood.
So do I.
I walk to work every day.
So do I.
We do not think he's right.
Neither do I.
Seema does not have a dog.
Neither do I.
To demonstrate the form, all responses today will use the subject I. But other subjects can be used, such as a person's name, a thing, or a pronoun. For example,
Seema does not have a dog.
Neither does Manny.
Now, on to the verb be. To agree with simple present statements when the verb is be, we can say, "So am I," and "Neither am I." Listen to how the speakers use them.
Kayla is allergic to milk.
So am I.
We are not at the show.
Neither am I.
We also use "so am I" and "neither am I" to agree with statements in the present continuous verb tense. This tense is sometimes called be plus ing.
I am leaving for the summer.
So am I.
Cotty is not teaching online.
Neither am I.
Now we will move to the simple past tense. We can say, "So did I," and "Neither did I," to agree with statements in the simple past tense. I wonder what our speakers will say this time.
My sister loved the surprise party.
So did I.
I did not bring my library card.
Neither did I.
And lastly, we can say, "So was I," and "Neither was I," to agree with simple past statements when the verb is be. Listen to how the speakers use them.
They were tired after the flight.
So was I.
Rami was not in the group.
Neither was I.
Well, I'll stop there. We do not have time in this program to talk about other verb tenses and modal auxiliary verbs such as can and should. Still, there's a lot you can do with what you learned. For example, check for today's uses of so and neither as you read stories, listen to music, and watch shows and films in American English. And, when possible, try responding to other English speakers with today's shortened responses. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Have fun with it. Soon, the responses will come more naturally. I promise.
So do we.
I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Larry West and Tony Riggs continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson.
In 1917, Europe was at war. It was the conflict known as World War I. After 3 years of fighting, Europe's lands were filled with the sights and sounds of death. But still, the armies of the Allies and the Central Powers continued to fight. The United States had tried to keep out of the European conflict. It declared its neutrality. In the end, however, neutrality was impossible. Germany was facing starvation because of a British naval blockade. To break the blockade, German submarines attacked any ship that sailed to Europe. That included ships from neutral nations, like the United States. The German submarines sank several American ships. Many innocent people were killed.
German submarine attacks finally forced the United States into the war. It joined the Allies, Britain, France, and Russia. Like most Americans, President Wilson did not want war, but he had no choice. Sadly, he asked Congress for a declaration of war. Congress approved the declaration on April 6, 1917. It was not long before American soldiers reached the European continent. They marched in a parade through the streets of Paris. The people of France gave them a wild welcome. They cheered the young Americans. They threw flowers at the soldiers and kissed them.
The Americans marched to the burial place of the Marquis de Lafayette. Lafayette was the French military leader who had come to America's aid during its war of independence from Britain. The United States wanted to repay France for its help more than 100 years earlier. An American army officer made a speech at the tomb. He said, "Lafayette, we are here."
And so the Americans were there. They were ready to fight in the bloodiest war the world had ever known. Week by week, more American troops arrived. By October 1917, the American army in Europe totaled 100,000 men. The leader of that army was General John J. Pershing. Pershing's forces were not sent directly into battle. Instead, they spent time training, building bases, and preparing supplies. Then, a small group was sent to the border between Switzerland and Germany. The Americans fought a short but bitter battle there against German forces. The Germans knew the American soldiers had not fought before. They tried to frighten the Americans by waving their knives and guns in a fierce attack. The Americans surprised the Germans. They stood and fought back successfully.
Full American participation in the fighting did not come for several months. It came only after another event took place. That event changed the war and the history of the 20th century. It was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Its leader was Vladimir Lenin. The Russian Revolution began in the spring of 1917. The people of that country were tired of fighting Germany, and they were tired of their ruler, Tsar Nicholas. The Tsar was overthrown. A temporary government was established. It was headed by Alexander Kerensky. President Woodrow Wilson sent a team of American officials to Russia to help Kerensky's new government. The officials urged Russia to remain in the war.
Under Kerensky, Russia did keep fighting, but it continued to suffer terrible losses. Many Russians demanded an end to the war. Lenin saw this opposition as a way to gain control of the government. So he went to the city of Petrograd. There, he led the opposition to the war and to Kerensky. Night after night, he spoke to big crowds. "What do you get from war?" he shouted. "Only wounds, hunger, and death." Lenin promised peace under Bolshevik communism. Within a few months, he won control of the Petrograd Soviet. That was an organization of workers and soldiers.
Kerensky's government continued to do badly in the war. More and more Russian soldiers lost hope. Many fled the army. Others stayed, but they refused to fight. The end came in November 1917. Soldiers in Petrograd turned against Kerensky. Lenin ordered them to rebel, and he took control of the government within 48 hours. Russia was now a communist nation. As promised, Lenin called for peace. So Russia signed its own peace treaty with Germany. The treaty forced Russia to pay a high price for its part in the war. It had to give up a third of its farmland, half of its industry, and 90% of its coal mines. It also lost a third of its population. Still, it did not have real peace with Germany.
The treaty between Russia and Germany had a powerful influence on the military situation in the rest of Europe. Now, Germany no longer had to fight an enemy on two fronts. Its eastern border was quiet suddenly. It could aim all its forces against Britain, France, and the other Allies on its western border. Germany had suffered terrible losses during 4 years of war. Many of its soldiers had been killed, and many of its civilians had come close to starving because of the British naval blockade. Yet, Germany's leaders still hoped to win. They decided to launch a major attack. They knew they had to act quickly before the United States could send more troops to help the Allies.
German military leaders decided to break through the long battle line that divided most of Central Europe. They planned to strike first at the north end of the line. British troops held that area. The Germans would push the British off the continent and back across the English Channel. Then they would turn all their strength on France. When France was defeated, Germany would be victorious. The campaign opened in March 1918. German forces attacked British soldiers near Amiens, France. The Germans had 6,000 pieces of artillery. The British troops fought hard, but could not stop the Germans. They were pushed back 50 kilometers. The attack stopped for about a week.
Then the Germans struck again. This time, their target was Ypres, Belgium. The second attack was so successful, it seemed the Germans might push the British all the way back to the sea. The British commander, Field Marshal Douglas Haig, ordered his men not to withdraw. Haig said, "There is no other course open to us but to fight it out." The British fought hard and stopped the attack. Losses on both sides were extremely high. Yet the Germans continued with their plan.
Their next attack was northeast of Paris in May. This time, they broke the Allied line easily and rushed toward Paris. The German army chief, General Erich Ludendorff, tried to capture the French capital without waiting to strengthen his forces. He got close enough to shell the city. The French government prepared to flee. Allied military leaders rushed more troops to the area. The new force included two big groups of American Marines.
The heaviest fighting was outside Paris at a place called Belleau Wood. The American Marines were advised to prepare for a possible withdrawal. One Marine said, "Withdrawal? We just got here." The Marines resisted as the Germans attacked Allied lines in Belleau Wood again and again. Then they attacked the German lines. The battle for Belleau Wood lasted 3 weeks. It was the most serious German offensive of the war. The Germans lost.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.